So let's just talk about perfectionism for a second, shall we, guys? I am always, what should I say, always? I'm less than I used to, but kind of always worried about doing everything really well, everything really perfectly. And I'm also profoundly aware that when we're worried about something that needs to change, the universe will correct us. And so right before I hopped on to this interview with Eddie Lindenstein that you're going to hear today, I was telling him that my recording equipment was such that we had to, you know, do the interview in a certain way because I really wanted it to sound perfect. And he was kind of like, yeah, well, that doesn't happen, you know, and we were laughing about it. So meanwhile, we do the entire interview. And when I went to play it back, I realized that my mic malfunctioned and my computer recorded it from the mic that is located in the computer. So his audio sounds beautiful and I sound like I'm in a tunnel. And that's the universe saying, hey girl, if you're going to strive for perfection all the time, which is a route to misery because no one can ever be perfect, we're just going to correct you. And something that works every single time you ever try it is just going to not work for a 50-minute interview. So anyway, guys, just letting you learn from me, always saying, learn from me. Don't try to be perfect, because the more we try to be perfect, the more we just have to step in a lot of holes. And I'm kind of feeling like the universe has been correcting me a lot lately. So anyway, just thought I'd open and share with that. So hi, guys. I'm Nicole. This is The Cure for Chronic Pain with me, Nicole Sachs. And we are here today on podcast day. Happy day. If you're listening to us on Friday, happy Friday. Happy almost weekend. Today, I am bringing you a really awesome interview with Eddie Lindenstein. And many of you who listen to my podcast are also fans of Eddie's podcast, which is called the Mind and Fitness Podcast. And it drops every Wednesday and it's available everywhere you get your podcasts. So iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Audioboom. And so if you're ever looking for another mind-body podcast to listen to, if you're just a fan of this one, his is a really great one. He does awesome interviews. He speaks from the heart. He talks about his life. He talks about his experiences. And he's also an athlete. So if any of you out there are either competing athletes in any sport, he is a weightlifter, but just anybody who wants to talk about how this work can affect you in terms of your actual body as a performing athlete, he's also really, really great to listen to about that topic. So anyway, Eddie joins me today. We did a really great interview, and we're going to talk about a lot of topics that I'll just kind of let that one lie because we're going to obviously listen to the interview in a couple minutes. But I also want to tell you guys that I spent the morning meeting with Athena and Erin, who are two of my guest instructors at Omega, laying out the whole week. And it's probably about 2 weeks away by the time this airs. And so there's still time to sign up. And if anyone is interested in joining me to learn with me live and in person, very hands-on, very connected, very much of a community that we will be forming there, come to the Omega Institute July 21st through the 26th. All information to sign up is either at eomega.org, just search my name, Nicole Sachs, or go to my website, which is thecurefochronicpain.com, and click on the resources tab. And the first link there is the link that you could read more about Omega and sign up. The Omega Institute for Holistic Studies is in Rhinebeck, New York, which is not New York City. I've had people writing to me and saying, oh, I don't know if I could handle being in New York City. It's very not New York City. It is the country outside of New York City. It is a couple hours north. It's rolling hills and beautiful hiking trails and yoga and meditation and a lake with boats. And it's just amazing. The most beautiful organic food. Everything is included when you stay there. And so anyway, that would be an amazing thing to have you at. We are planning it. It is going to be magical and life-changing, and I hope I can meet you there. I know I'm meeting a lot of you guys. I've heard from a lot of you guys. If anyone has any questions, just email me, thecureforchronicpain@gmail.com. Email me. I will answer any questions you have. I get back to everyone, especially some people. I get a lot of emails, and some people, I want you to know I read them all. Some people just like write to tell me their stories, and I don't necessarily have time to write every one of you guys back. But if you have a specific question about Omega and you're like really trying to consider how to join us, please, I promise you I will write you back. So hit me up. Other than that, I think that this interview speaks for itself. And so I, without further ado, give you Eddie Lindenstein. Hi, everybody. So I am here today with one of my favorite people in the TMS world, Eddie Lindenstein. And am I pronouncing that right?
Lindenstein.
Lindenstein. Thank God I asked. I am here with Eddie Lindenstein, and he is one of my favorite people because, first of all, I love his radio voice, which you guys are going to get to hear. And second of all, he has brought himself through this TMS journey, which with such grace, and now can explain it with such intelligence. And many of you out there have heard his podcast, which is the Mind and Fitness Podcast. And he interviews really interesting people, among them me. And he also talks about a lot of topics that I find educational, and I've been doing this for 100 years. So I really love his input. But first of all, I would love to hear, Eddie, about your story, because I think I know about it a little bit, but I don't know the real details of it, and I know it's really powerful. So is that good for you to start there with your story?
Yeah, no, for sure. Thanks for having me, by the way. 100 years, not quite 100 years, but you've joined me on my show graciously 3 times now, so it's cool to finally be on this. And yes, I have the Mind and Fitness Podcast. And actually, as you hear this, I should be 77 episodes in, I think. So I've been doing it close to 2 years, which is awesome. And actually, as we record this, we're in the final few days of June. And it's ironic we're having this conversation now, because for me, like I did the doctor chasing for a long time. And basically, it was from the end of, let's just call it the end of 20, not even the end, August of 2016 until late June of 2017, really, that I kind of stumbled my way into Dr. Sarno's work. And basically it's like I had injured my shoulder at the end of 2015, and it was in weightlifting. So I trained competitive weightlifting and had a shoulder dislocation, was in agony and couldn't get a doctor to approve an MRI. I knew as an athlete, there was something that felt really, really off, just didn't feel right. Something felt off. And so I think a month and a half, 2 months went by before a doctor finally cleared me for an MRI. And I went and I had the MRI done. And it's kind of amazing because I was on painkillers and anti-inflammatories for those couple of months in between injury and actually having the imaging done. And then I had the imaging done, and it revealed it depends on who you ask, but 3 different doctors had 3 different theories. But the prevailing theory was you have this torn labrum, and that is the source of your pain. And it's interesting because we as humans, as I have learned, are so open to the power of suggestion. And so when a doctor had said, essentially, Eddie, you have a torn labrum, everything's going to be okay, my pain level plummeted pretty quickly, actually. And so I scheduled surgery to occur 3 months later, and this takes us now into April of 2016. I have the surgery, and I'm terrified of even flu shots. And so to have the experience of going in for a surgery was quite an experience. But I get in there, they tell me to count down from 100. I'm asleep before I get to 98, probably. And I wake up, and I have this sling on my arm, and I was in no pain whatsoever. I went through rehab for a little under 5 months, and they said that it was one of the fastest rehabs that they had ever experienced. And I thought, okay, like now I'm going to get my life back. And it's really interesting because I had a target date of when it was that I was going to be medically cleared for all activity. It was going to be September 7th of 2016. That was what the doctors had said when we had set the final appointments. On that day, you'll be able to do anything you want. About 2-3 weeks before this, I started to have some knee pain, like kind of knee tendonitis-ish feeling, went and got some anti-inflammatories. I felt fine. As soon as the knee cleared up, so this was a couple of days later, and again, I'm approaching this extended amount of time that I'm rehabbing my shoulder, I got my first really scary symptom, which was sciatica. And I woke up and my right leg, it was like lightning bolts shooting from my hip down to my calf, my foot and all that kind of stuff. And I'd never experienced like a nerve issue before. And so that was really that was really pretty scary. And give it, I don't know, a week and a half, 2 weeks. We're getting even closer to when I'm supposed to be cleared for all activity and again, get my life back. Doctor clears me for all activity. The next day I have a terrible spasm in my mid back, upper back when I'm at the gym. And I was, you know, I was flat on my ass basically. The next day it was like flu-like symptoms. This is really when like the bottom fell out. And what followed was months and months and months of going from doctor to doctor to doctor, being diagnosed with different things, being recommended neck surgery, being recommended examining the other shoulder. I was having a lot of tingling, numbness in my hands, circulatory problems. So I would have like, you know, I'd have cold hands 1 second, I'd have hot hands the next second. And stomach problems. And it was just kind of like, I just felt like, okay, 30 years old is about where it ends for me and my good health. And I quit the gym entirely. I remember the doctor that did my shoulder looked at me and said, this is coming from your neck. So I went and had a neck MRI done, EMG studies. So it was all these kinds of things that were pointing to these massive structural problems. And in fact, the EMG suggested that I had major nerve lesions in my mid and upper back. And he recommended to go and see a neurosurgeon. And I read this article about this really well-known doctor at the University of Washington, which is right where I live out here in Seattle. She's the head physician for the football team and really well-respected. There was an article that was published not long before this of a couple of the chimps at the local zoo got into a fight and one of them really damaged his knee. She went to go and perform. They had recommended an ACL repair for the chimp. She goes to perform the surgery, doesn't end up doing the surgery, and had said that she didn't feel like the chimp needed this surgery. So she was in the news, like had been talked about. There was a cancellation. I got in to see her, and she reviews all of my imaging, all the stuff that suggested, even my the results from when I went to Montana to have my neck operated on. So she looks at all these things that every other doctor was saying, yeah, you have a major problem. We should probably, you know, open that up and remove some of the muscles in your neck or some of the muscles in your chest and open up some of these nerve pathways and, you know, artery pathways and things like that. And she did an hour probably examination on me and then asked me very seriously, tell me what your life is like and tell me what your stress level is like and what do you have going on in your life. And I had said that, you know, I've got a kid. I've got another kid on the way. I have a sales job. She was like, how do you, you know, what's your performance like at work? And she just kind of got into all these things. She did what a great salesperson does, which is what I do by trade. Meaning that she asked me really everything around the problem, but not about the problem itself. And because it led me to see my own conclusions, which was really, it was pretty pivotal. And a few weeks went by and I didn't really do anything with that information outside of continuing to Google. But in the back of my mind, I was thinking, God, it was such a fundamentally different type of an appointment. And one day towards the end of June, I can't remember the exact day, but it was right around 2 years ago as we record this. And I was looking on Google or on Amazon for some, I don't know, some kind of foam roller or something like that. And in the suggested purchases section, it said, healing back pain by Dr. Sarno. And a lot of times as a consumer, what I do with anything I buy is how many reviews does it have and how positive are the reviews? And so Sarno had 1600 reviews on healing back pain and he had like a 4.8 out of 5. And I just went there and started reading a lot of the reviews and was blown away.
Before we move to the solution, I kind of want to just say something because I think it's something that people really need to hear, which is what happened to Eddie is so typical, which is he had a pain that in its genesis was emotionally derived anyway. But when they found an incidental finding, which is this torn labrum, he put all his faith in the fact that if that were fixed, he would be well. And then once that was quote unquote fixed, then listen, I'm sure the labrum was torn. You know, I'm a person that believes in, of course, I believe in Western medicine. You know, my children go to the doctor. If they needed a knee replacement or whatever, an ACL, they would get it. But the point of the matter is that even though that was probably torn, it probably had nothing to do with your pain. But when that kind of thing is fixed and then your symptoms start cascading all over your body, it's just such a perfect example of the nervous system in sustained fight or flight. Wouldn't you agree, Eddie?
Certainly. And one thing that was interesting that, you know, hindsight's 2020, and it's easy for me to go back and think about a lot of these appointments and conversations with doctors that I had. But I remember the PA, the physician assistant of the surgeon who eventually did my shoulder surgery. And so there was the torn labrum. It was a torn rotator cuff. I'd fractured the top of my arm. So there was some tissue that they could see from that. But one interesting thing that the physician assistant had said to me that he had learned in medical school is that pretty much anybody, I remember if he said 35 years old or 40 years old, he had said well over 50% of people, probably close to 2/3, have a torn rotator cuff. But he didn't say that over 50% or as close to 2/3 of people have shoulder pain. And I thought, thinking back, I think that's really interesting that he had said that so many people have torn rotator cuffs. We hear about them in, you know, if you live near New York, if you turn on any sort of a sports report, there's going to be some kind of a Yankees or Mets pitcher or somebody that has a torn rotator cuff, and it sounds like a death sentence for athletes. He's telling me that most people at 35 or 40 athletes are not have torn rotator cuffs. And so I had these things repaired, what I thought the problem was. And it's really tough as me as an athlete, which I'm sure we'll get to this in a minute. I'm back to training and all that kind of stuff, and as good as I ever was, better than I ever was, actually. But it's tough to, as an athlete, to turn back and say all these things that you were sure and all the things that you were completely sure on as an athlete and the problems that you've had and the health issues that you had over the years was emotionally rooted and not physically rooted because of the way that you train, and that you may have just blown 5 months of your life on a surgery that you didn't need, is a tough thing to, you know, it's a tough pill to swallow. Like in strength sports, like dropping weight is it's not the best thing in the world. Like you try and maintain a certain weight so that you can train at an adequate level. I mean, in that period of time between having the injury and being fully recovered from surgery, I had dropped 20 or 25 pounds that, you know, that takes a lot off of performance, and then having to relearn how to do everything. You know, it's devastating. So I could have quite possibly thrown 5 months of my life away. But as I've been told since, like, look at all the things that you've gained since then after the fact.
And the thing about that is, I think what most people need to understand is, even though you might have taken 5 months out of your life that you can't get back, that is not a reason to not, you know, kind of pull all your energy together and say, you know what, though, if I am hearing from enough people, you know, because I interview people all the time, and all the time the story is the same, which is they went down this road, they tried everything, they did everything, and when they finally came up short, they had tremendous regret of all the money spent and all the time spent and all the wasted time. But you can still start today. Today can be the beginning of anything you want. Because as you're going to hear, as, you know, Eddie continues his story, his life is, and we're going to talk more about it. I don't want to get too much into it now, but his life is better in, I think, from what I know about his life, every way, including his ability to parent and be a partner, which I see that oftentimes in my own life, that, you know, pain and the entry point of pain is the biggest, littlest part. Because it invites you into this process, but then it avails you knowledge about yourself that you never would have had. And, you know, I guess I just wanted to also say that when your nervous system goes into sustained fight or flight, all those things that Eddie had, you know, you could never, no medical doctor would ever connect a stomach problem to a torn rotator cuff, but they're the same. Those symptoms are interchangeable when it comes to TMS. So I just wanted to kind of bring light to that, because I think that's a very common experience where you go to fix one thing and you might get slight alleviation in that one area or even full alleviation. And all of a sudden that nervous system has nowhere to put the energy, and this, it starts cascading all over your body, which is exactly what happened to you.
Yeah, certainly. Well, and there's a guy, he's a YouTuber. His name is, I think it's Elliot Hulse. People can, if they're interested in this stuff, if they're athletes and they're listening, if you go to YouTube and you just type strength camp, Elliot strength, meaning, you know, like I'm strong strength. I've been watching his videos for a long time, well before any of this injury stuff. And the thing that he always talks about in so many of his videos, and he's got, I don't know, a million subscribers or something like that, is basically that the nervous system is king of, is rules all. Yeah. If the nervous system isn't in line, it doesn't matter the type of training that you do. You can beat yourself to death 6 hours a day, and you're not going to be a better athlete if your nervous system is out of whack. And I just always thought, like, you know, what does that even mean? Like, what a bunch of baloney, you know, that kind of thing. But looking back, I'm like, God, like, it'd be awesome to interview him on my podcast if I could ever get, you know, get a hold of him, that kind of thing, because it's so true. And now, being an armchair quarterback and going to my own gym and observing people that have been nursing a knee issue for a year, or nursing, you know, different types of issues, or spending 45 minutes a day on a foam roller. You know, I wish that I could say, hey man, consider this other thing. But in a lot of ways, since I've brought that, you know, as much as like my podcast and my voice has grown over the last 2 years, despite the fact that there's, I don't know, probably 3,000 people in the world that spend an hour with me every Wednesday and listen to it across 86 countries or something like that. The people that I open this up to, especially the people in my family or my close circle or whatever, think that it's, you know, it's a bunch of wizardry and it's a bunch of BS anyway. But, you know, I'm sure, I know that you face that exact same thing sometimes. And I, you know, well, that's, and to be honest, like, I probably would have felt that exact same way if I didn't hear the message when I did from the doctor that I did at UW when she said all that.
Yeah. And, you know, I really do believe that true readiness is everything. You know, I think that sometimes we have to go through the motions. Some people have to get a surgery. Some people have to see for themselves that nothing else is working. And, you know, even though, and I hear you, listen, Dr. Sarno himself, who was very dear to me, who I spent many hours talking with about this very subject, was very disheartened by the fact that it seemed like wizardry. But my job, I feel, one of my jobs in my life, as many years as I get, is to bring to light the fact that this is more scientific than surgery. Dr. Sarno said that himself. It's actually a quote in the movie All the Rage, where he's being interviewed, and he said, "My methods are more scientific than surgery." Because when you think about nervous system science, and when you think about brain science, and when you think about if you cut off your head, you're not going to feel pain in your shoulder. Your brain rules everything. You can't have a sensation of feeling without your brain. You cannot have a survival instinct. You can't run faster or jump higher without your nervous system. And so when those two entities get together and feel that you are in danger because your emotions are a greater predator, your repressed emotions are a greater predator than the physical pain that is slowing you down, that's causing you to take care of yourself. And I put that in quotes because it doesn't always take better care of ourselves to go to a million doctors and do whatever kind of treatments we're doing. But in the estimation of the brain and the nervous system, it actually does. And if you think about the fact that the predator is anything that causes an emotional trigger, the pain keeps you safe. It keeps you in bed. It keeps you at home. It keeps you safe. So, and I know you guys hear me say this again and again, but I do think sometimes the 100th time you hear something, you're like, oh yeah, right?
Right. Yeah, no, for sure. And it's interesting because I don't think this is, it's not the intent of people that have kind of gone through this experience like you or I have. And I know that you talk a lot about, you know, going to see physicians and getting things checked out and stuff like that. But I've dropped my personal, what do you call it? The family doctor, basically, for me each year to get some kind of a checkup, just because I just think every time I would go to see him, it was some kind of a fear mongering, you know, your cholesterol's out of whack, or, you know, this muscle's too tight and all that kind of stuff. And I'm just kind of over it. I don't know. I get my entire perspective on health and wellness just in general has been completely flipped on its head, which was not something I expected to happen at 33.
So having said that, why don't we go back to your story? So having said that your entire conception of your health has been flipped on its head, let's talk about how that happened. So you read the Sarno reviews and you started to see that this was not nothing. This was a thing. And then what happened then?
So I read it in like two or three nights, and I came inside after starting it, you know, after reading the first third of it or whatever, out on the deck. And I can't remember exactly what I would have said to my wife, Jenny, but I basically had told her, I'm reading this book and this guy says this stuff. And I had highly simplified it at first. I had said because it was due to stress, which I think in a lot of ways, like that's about as big as it gets for mainstream medicine. You know, Western mainstream medicine is a stress manifestation, but, I brought that up to her, and I think it was just kind of like, you know, sort of an indifferent response, you know, not in a bad way or anything, but I was just scraping the tip of the iceberg on this stuff myself. And as I continued to uncover it and unearth it, and his advice being get back to absolute maximum physical activity as best you can, you know, however quickly you can. By this point, it's like July 1st or, you know, ish within a couple of days. And I left the gym in January. Basically, I competed at a weightlifting meet in terrible pain, but I had a great competition. several hours later, I felt like my body had broken down. It was that electric lightning bolts piercing from my neck down to my hands. And I just thought, okay, like, until I can find a doctor that can fix this, you know, that can fix me, basically, I'm not going to return to weightlifting or doing any sort of anything with a barbell. Quit my gym. And I would, like, literally over that few months of despair, I would listen to interviews of, like, broken athletes talking about how their lives were completely over and ended. And I would do this like 3 times a week. I would go on a walk and listen to these interviews with these guys who used to have it and don't have it anymore. Like, what a terrible place to be. And so when he put that in his book, Get Back to Maximum Physical Activity, that was kind of like the moment of like, am I going to do this or not do this? And at that point I had a pretty good chunk of pain reduction, let's say, I don't know, 25 or 30% or so, just from reading the book, and which I feel like is pretty good. But that was enough to tell me, you really got to go take his advice. And I went back to the gym that I was at, which isn't cheap. It's, you know, it's almost $200 a month, and it's a CrossFit and weightlifting gym, and it's the nicest gym in the area. And I went there, and I always think, being somebody that's in sales, what is the ultimate way to invest in something? Why are things priced the way that they are? And it's like, if you invest a lot of money into something, you have more skin in the game. It's why we buy iPhones. It's why we buy cars that are a little bit nicer, things that we invest in that we're going to spend some money on. If we spend nothing at a gym, if we spend $10 a month at a gym, how incentivized are we to go there? How much are we in it? So I actually purchased 3 months all up front, asked them, can I pay for 3 months all up front instead of doing a month to month or whatever I had been on before? And of course, they're going to say yes. And so there I am. You know, I dropped 3 months all up front when I hadn't touched a gym in 6 months and started going back 5 days a week and felt pretty well like my normal performing self within, I don't know, a couple of months, a few months. But I was back doing gymnastics movements in the rings and, you know, deadlifting and doing snatches and squats and all that kind of stuff. And it was probably within, I don't know, 7 or 8 months, I was lifting more, you know, more weight than I ever had. And that wasn't something that I was expecting, especially after all the shoulder stuff. And people that hadn't seen me in a long time that just knew that I kept posting on social media different health issues that I was having, you know, they would ask me like, what ended up happening? And for the people that I felt like were worthy of the information, I would just say that, you know, the issues that I had with it, I think, were more mentally and emotionally rooted than anything. And then for the other ones, I just said the pain went away and left it at that. But it was, you know, it was such a rapid turnaround. And, you know, my wife's obviously very thankful for it. And my daughter's obviously very thankful for it. And I certainly feel like it's changed me pretty substantially. But really, like, you know, the book and the concepts gave me my life back. I went back to the gym. I mean, I had my motorcycle up on Craigslist for sale. That went off and I started riding again, long distance rides with buddies of mine. Just really a pretty amazing turnaround. Tough to describe. As you know, as much as I talk about it every single week, it's still tough to describe that I went through all that and feels like it was a lifetime ago.
So I have a question for you in terms of the insights that you bring, because I follow you on social media and I pay attention to what you say. Now, first explain to me, because I don't even know, when people come to me and tell me that they've come across my work, I rarely know how they did. So what was the circumstance that you knew about my work, and how have you incorporated Journal Speak into your journey? Because I have questions for you based on the fact that you really come up with insightful stuff. So it's not just that you're some guy who was, you know, a lifter and then you came across healing back pain and you're better and you stopped thinking about it. You obviously have used this to evolve yourself into a pretty high-minded thinker about your mind-body connection. So give me some sense about how that happened for you.
So I came across your name first. It probably would have been just being associated in one of the Facebook groups and seeing your name and feeling like, oh, this is somebody that's pretty knowledgeable on a lot of this, on a lot of this stuff. But then secondly, I got in touch with, after I saw the, it wasn't long after I had, you know, I looked up YouTube, Dr. Sarno, found the 2020 thing, but then found the trailer for All the Rage. Somehow got in touch with Michael Galinsky pretty fast after that. I don't even think the movie was out yet. And, hopefully I won't get in trouble for saying this, but basically I had told him, hey, here's my story. Here's what happened. I'm planning on eventually starting this podcast, you know, kind of the whole rundown. He ended up sending me an advanced copy of All the Rage. So I got to see it before it was even out on Vimeo. And I have, you know, I have a couple of copies of it now. And I saw you had this part where you talked for, I don't know, 10 seconds at the very end. And it was just one of the more...
Let's say a second and a half.
A second and a half. But, you know, what caught my eye initially was just like... I've been in radio. I did sports radio, did broadcasting. I've done phone sales. So like, I'm just very attuned with voices that I like. It's just I was at a barbecue, a kid's barbecue the other day. And I heard this parent talking in the distance. And I remember telling my wife, I'm like, if that guy's not doing voiceovers, he really should be. So I catch these kind of things and just how your voice sounded and the passion to which you talked about it. That's kind of what led me to dive a little bit deeper into that. Who you were. And then I think I found, your book was mentioned like as a suggested reading after the Sarno books and things like that. So it's probably a combination of a lot of those things, but I remember just coming across your name, and then ultimately seeing you at the end of All the Rage, was a part of it. And then, you know, since then on the podcast, on my podcast, I think I've mentioned a couple of times, I said, if there's, such a thing as a psychology celebrity crush, Nicole Sachs is mine.
I haven't heard you say that, but I'm gonna look out for that.
So there's all that. And then when you started talking about, I don't know, it was maybe a year and a half ago, sometime towards the end of 2017, you posted something about like the open letter to Lady Gaga, and I've been so fascinated by her, you know, well before any of this stuff happened with me, and well before any of her fibromyalgia or hip issues or anything like that. I just always have thought the world of her as a performer. And I, you know, again, this is another thing where it's like, oh, Nicole has this interest in this artist who I've loved for the last 10 years. You know, she's somebody worth listening to. So.
And when you post about things and when you talk about the depth that you try to connect, like parenting issues or like, you know, any sort of life things, how do you live in terms of allowing yourself to feel those things and not allowing it to be held in your body? Do you have a practice that you use?
Yeah, and it's been refined and it's been refined and it's been refined. And I feel like every few months it would get more complicated and it would get longer. And the thing is, like, there obviously is, there's work to do, but I think sometimes people can take it a little bit too far. You talked before when I'd interviewed you about the distinction and the difference that Sarno had made and how he prescribed. Like, I think in the beginning you had said something like he had prescribed like an hour in the morning and a half hour at night. And then I think he shrunk that down a little bit. Because the thing is, like, we all have lives, right? So to be able to dedicate 90 minutes or 2 hours or 3 hours or whatever each day when you've got kids and a spouse and you've got a job and you've got pets that are sick and all this kind of stuff, like, it's just tough to be able to dedicate that. And I think ultimately what ends up happening is people just fall off and they stop doing something. And so mine has kind of become, it's evolved in this almost like a hybrid. It's weird because I feel like Sarno and Ozanich are kind of the two most well-known on the topic, but the suggestions that they give are the furthest away from the things that I would do or I would recommend to somebody. And so for me, it's like a hybrid between what you talk about doing and then what Adam Heller suggests. And what I mean by Adam Heller being the guy who wrote Zero Pain Now. And what I mean by that is that, taking a journaling approach of being really honest with yourself, that word truth, which you posted on your Instagram last night, somebody asked you like what your favorite words are and you had truth there. I feel like it's so powerful. What is your truth? And it takes a long time. I remember it took like 7 months of therapy twice a week with a psychologist with me to be able to just say out loud that my daughter Zoe upsets me sometimes. And it sounds so elementary, but to be able to take that leap and to be able to say that and admit that this stuff is really hard, because that doesn't align with traditional like good dad of daughters speak. You know what I mean? And so like I if you would have asked me 3 years ago, hey, Eddie, say that Zoe bothers you sometimes, it would have been, I mean, I probably would have said I'd rather be in pain the rest of my life than to say something like that out loud. But the fact is, to be able to utter what some of those truths are, or that, hey, sometimes, like, you know, I love my wife, but there's certain things about a relationship maybe that I don't love. You know, it could be a variety of things. Maybe the job that I picked, and also just being in paralyzing fear of making a mistake. Like a good example of a stupid thing is like, I was searching for the right motorcycle helmet for like 5 years to be able to pick the right one because I was so paralyzed about making the wrong decision. I didn't want to make the wrong decision. So I just wouldn't make one. And then finally, like just making the leap and having faith that, hey, what I'm picking here is going to be the right thing. And ultimately it was like just trusting my gut and taking the intuition and doing that. So the other thing that I do, it might be 10 minutes of journaling every day. It might be 10 minutes of journaling once a week. But to me, the more powerful thing that I have found is really being able to get in touch with a bodily sensation of some kind. And 99.9% of the time, it takes the most intense focus that I can possibly have. And that's why I can only do this for 1 or 2 or 3 minutes at a time. But finding someplace quiet, sometimes it's in my car after I meet with a client. Sometimes it's taking a walk and doing it at a park bench. And sometimes it's laying in bed right before I fall asleep at night. But I call it the Stark Reactor because I love Tony Stark and I love Iron Man and I love superheroes. And Tony Stark and Iron Man has that arc reactor thing that's stuck in his chest. And the storyline in the movie is that it's keeping shrapnel from entering his heart and killing him. And I think of it in a lot of the same ways of this kind of stuff. It's like if you really want to have your life back and not be in pain and not quote unquote die, which is a little dramatic, but you need to envision that you have this same arc reactor in your chest. So I close my eyes and I think about this part of my chest and it's getting quicker. Like it used to take 15 minutes of trying to focus on this thing before I would feel some kind of a sensation. And now it's usually within 30 seconds to 45 seconds. I start, as soon as I think about that spot, like then I can start feeling tightness in my chest and I can start feeling different sensations and they'll run from my chest up to my neck and into my jaw and then into my shoulders and then back to my chest and maybe into my stomach, but it's along that trunk. And ultimately by doing that within, I don't know, somewhere between, let's say 30 minutes and 3 hours, if I was feeling some kind of tension or issue in my body or something with my stomach or a headache or something like that, it's vanished where I don't even think about it. So just being able to really keep in tune and just be a watcher as opposed to having to take that ride and, you know, talk to these sensations that are visiting me. I'm really just watching them and that's it. Non-judgmentally, they are what they are. Sometimes it'll feel like a quiver in my throat, that feeling right before you're about to cry. And other times it'll just be an intense tightness, that if I didn't know any better, I could think, oh, I'm having a heart attack, but I know that I'm not, and I know it's going to go away.
Yeah, you know, what you bring up, which I think is really important, is the concept of observation. Because I often say to people, the whole point of therapy, when you're in therapy, is to create an observational self. So your triggers are not you. So there's a space, there's a pause between something that happens to you and your response. And that creates a person who responds instead of reacts, which is a huge difference. Those two R words are very different. And so what I'm hearing is that you take this moment to pay attention to your body, to focus, to visualize this protective mechanism in your chest and to be aware of the sensations in your body. And that helps you be that observer. And it also helps you, you know, in a lot of Buddhist philosophy in terms of meditation, they say, you are the sky and your thoughts are just weather. And so you're just watching the clouds as the sky instead of being the clouds and being the bad weather that's rolling through.
Yeah. And I think about a couple other things with this stuff is that everybody thinks they suck at meditation. I think even you've said that. And I, for the longest time, thought of, and I recently have only changed this in the last few days, so this is like hot off the presses, but I thought of meditation for a long time as like you're just sitting there in silence and that's it. Like the whole idea is that you're not thinking about anything, but that's impossible to do, especially if you don't have a North Star that you can even think about. And so lately, just in the last few days, I've been thinking, well, maybe what I'm doing for 1 to 2 to 3 minutes of focusing on that Stark reactor is meditation. There aren't any thoughts running through my head. It's literally just a feeling, and that's all that it is. And then on the flip side of that, I also had for the longest time have thought that feeling feelings and the feeling of feelings is having some kind of an outburst. You know, could be anger, but in a lot of ways, maybe it's sadness, like actually pouring out and crying. Like there was a buddy of mine. It was the night before my second daughter was born, Audrey. So it was January 11th of last year. there was an old friend of mine who he had been diagnosed with brain cancer, I don't know, maybe 11 years earlier. And then eventually the tumors had spread throughout his spine and he passed away on January 11th of last year. And I hadn't cried, period, since probably, I don't know, it had been over 10 years for anything outside of, you know, the tears at my wedding or the tears when a kid is born or things like that, but like tears out of sadness or tears out of anger. And I remember I was sitting in my bedroom and I had just gotten the news and my wife came upstairs and, you know, we're packing for the hospital and Zoe's walking around upstairs and Jenny comes in and she asked me what was going on. And I told her about Chris and I just lost. I mean, it was like 45 minutes of uncontrollable. And by the way, this was leading up to the birth of my daughter and my back was killing me like for these few days leading up to that. And I just lost it like 45 minutes, uncontrollable weeping. And I remember Zoe walked in the room and at first I had thought like, maybe I should hold this back. She shouldn't see her dad cry. And then I just, you know, let it continue to happen. She just sat there with just the most like, she was just so gentle. Right. And just hugged me and comforted me. And it, you know, it was really such a beautiful moment, but I remember shortly after that, like my back pain vanished. Right. And so I thought like, this big emotional outburst is ultimately what we would need to become pain-free. And I've learned that not only is that not, you know, not the case at all, but I think the other piece that it's important that if those moments do come where you feel like you do really need to cry for whatever reason, you know, a death or something like that, like it's important to make sure that you have those moments as well.
Yeah. And, you know, I actually, speaking of Zoe, I want to touch back into what you said about Adam Heller and my work and uncovering the truth, which is, and I know that you're being very gentle, you know, and you can be as gentle as you want by saying, sometimes Zoe bothers me, but I'll speak for myself and say that I need to say stuff like, I don't want to be a parent anymore. You know, like I hate this. Like they more than bother me. They make me want to jump off a bridge. You know, I have to take it for me and for a lot of people that, you know, craft this journal speak because there's no shame in it. Every single person feels this way. Nobody is meant to be totally placid and grateful around children all the time. It's just freaking impossible. And so being able to connect to those truths and being able to say all the things you need to say and then still come out of it and be like, wow, wait a second. I'm still here. I'm alive. I didn't die. You know, I'm still a good person. And I guess for me, and I don't know if it's for you, but I always come to a place of very natural forgiveness for myself, you know, especially when I have to do a really harsh journal speak when I'm just basically killing off everyone in my family and, you know, regretting every choice I've ever made and wanting to crawl into a hole and all those things. I usually come up with a great deal of compassion for myself because I'm just a human person and I'm just trying the best I can. And I really have good intentions. And, you know, and even let's say I didn't have good intentions. Let's say I come upon something that I was a bitch. I was bad. I was mean. I was deceitful. I was self-serving. I can find compassion for myself because that's just that little kid inside that was not taught any better in certain parts of my life. You know, there were certain parts of my life that I was kind of left out to dry. My parents had their own stuff going on. They did not have time for me. And, you know, when you have to be little and kind of fend for yourself, sometimes you have decisions that you make that don't lead to the most functional adult decisions. And so it's about kind of observing yourself, you know, having an observational self, and then seeing how you might want to be different. So, you know, I think that parenting is a really huge trigger because and I'm wondering, for Eddie, your opinion about this, because for me, as my kids start to grow up, when I see myself reflected in my children in such a raw fashion, it can be really triggering. Is that true for you?
There's certain things that Zoe, now as she starts to, she's going to be five next week, and 5-year-olds have a lot of opinions, and which is okay, because 33-year-olds have a lot of opinions too. There's certain things that she says and does. Sometimes it's just her, I'm not the greatest person in the world, and for a long time, for years and years and years, my thought was like, basically, like, I'm Captain America and I have the utmost integrity. And so I can never let people see me sweat. And I can, and I always have to be, you know, I always have to be a certain way. Like, I have to be nice all the time. I have to be happy all the time. My kid can't see me upset, those kind of things. So that was the image that she saw for the first 3 years of her life, is this guy that never lets anything rattle him. And since then, it's not like it happens all the time, but she might do something that overly annoys me, and I'll, you know, stop that right now. And I hear her say those things to a doll or an animal in our house, or to her little sister, stop that right now. And like, I know where it's coming from. And the really shitty thing about it is I think back, like, my voice came from my mom, and then Zoe's getting my voice, and like, where does it stop? And to me, like, you know, we're all just trying to do the best with what we can, and we're all just trying to get through the day. And I think just being an emotionally available parent that allows their kid to see all sides of it is really the healthiest thing that can be done. So I think, like, being a parent is incredibly hard, and that evolution to be able to go from Zoe's the perfect kid and can do no wrong to several months of therapy to say Zoe annoys me sometimes, to then be able to say Zoe acts like a real asshole sometimes. And there are plenty of times to which me just being a single guy with no kids and I'm still renting a room in Bellingham, it sounds like a wonderful life. And I can't, you know, I can't go and ride my motorcycles with my buddies on a Saturday because I take Zoe to her freaking gymnastics. You know what I mean? So it's like, just being able to say those things. But the problem is, like, for the longest time, I felt like if I say this out loud, then that's the whole truth and nothing but the truth. So if I don't say it, then that means that it's never true. Which to me, more than anything, really crystallizes what the whole meaning of your book is just because you say this doesn't necessarily mean that it's true all the time and that it's the absolute and definite. One video that you did that really caught my attention, there was two things that you said, and I don't know if they were in the same video or not, but I felt like you were trying to explain something, and then you just stopped and you went, look, we're a very polite society. And I think of that a lot. And then I also think of when you went on the tirade about motherhood and how much you hated motherhood, and that it was, and that the realization you came to was that it's not about motherhood. It's about being able to say those things to yourself and admit them to yourself. And it's like, it's so subtle, but it's so important.
Oh yeah. I mean, I will tell you that here's my vision for everybody. So you can, like, kind of picture this in your mind. Here's what I think. Picture you're in a small room, and every single thing that you want, that you hope, that you dream for. So it could be relationships with your family. It could be finding love that you don't know yet. It could be having happy children that connect with you for the rest of your life. It could be money. It could be job security, whatever it is. It's all in the room with you. It's already there. And I believe this with my whole heart. But in between you and seeing that it's all already in the room with you, is a lot of sort of dark, thick fog. Okay. And the dark, thick fog is so opaque that truly you are clueless, that all that stuff is right there in the room with you. So what I see truth in journal speak as, it's like you're taking a ladle, or in this case, maybe a shovel, to this thick, dark sludge that exists between you and everything you want in life. And of course, in the process of getting all these things, you're going to be out of pain, because pain is simply a response to danger, to the danger that the nervous system perceives in the repressed emotion. So once you start telling this truth, and maybe the truth is really ugly, you know, when I said I hate being a mother, my God, I cannot tell you. I have five children. It is my overjoy to be a mother, but I couldn't see that. So in the room, what I wanted to see was the deep, huge, endless joy I have of being a mother. I wanted to see that, but I couldn't see it. I couldn't see it because I was exactly like you, Eddie. I never wanted my kids to see me sweat, never wanted to be upset in front of them. Everything's fine. Okay, let's go. No, no, guys, it's all good. It's all good was a huge phrase I used to say. Do not say that anymore. And so I finally figured it out. which is that if I want all those things that are already there for me, I just need to clear a path to it. And by saying I hate being a mother and taking a huge, I hate being a mother was like taking a, not a dump truck, whatever the large equipment would be, a crane. No, not a crane. See how I'm so, I'm such a girl. All right, whatever. That big thing that moves a lot of things, dirt, that thing. So it's like taking that and like moving so much of that out of the way because that was such an ugly truth. I think I was scared I hated being a mother. And what I think that really was I hated having to hide myself all the time from my children. I hated being not even in the room because I had to be so perfect in order to say I was a good parent. And as soon as I cleared that out, I started to see immediately the light shining through that fog of those children and what they really needed from me, which was to be like a human, vulnerable, present person. Kids need to see you cry. They need to see you angry. They need to know it's okay for them to feel those things too, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's, I'd say like, my parenting and my thought of parenting has changed substantially since kind of going through all this stuff and learning about it. But to me, maybe the biggest change is that, let's say in the pre Sarno era or the pre Payne era, whatever you want to call it. If Zoe fell or Zoe was, you know, say she came home from school and, you know, had a rough day or she fell and hurt herself or something like that, the immediate reaction was, A, you're good or you're going to be okay. But then, you know, just trying to get her to stop crying, not like it's not okay to cry, but more like shushing, you know, oh, come on, Zoe, you know, you're okay. You're okay. But that has completely where my voice is not, if she said, like the first question I ask her when she gets in the car every day when I pick her up is, Zoe, what are you feeling today? And most of the time it's happy. Sometimes it's sad. Let's say once or twice a week. And I ask her what happened and she'll tell me and we go on to this, how did that make you feel thing. But if it gets deeper than that and she starts crying, it's just an embrace and that's it. I don't need to ask any questions about it. And she gets to cry as long as she wants, even if it's something where I give her a bath and I wash her hair and she gets soap in her eyes. And, you know, once she gets out of the bath, like she's crying, like we just hug it out. And that's, you know, that's it. And that's where it is. I just want her to know that whatever it is that you feel, whether it's you being happy or you feeling ecstatic or you feeling angry or sad or happy or whatever, you can have those feelings. If it's anger, don't do it at the dinner table. You're free to feel anger in your playroom. You're free to feel anger in your bedroom. You know, no reason to take it out on any of the people here. But ultimately, just being able to feel those things, I feel like is such a pivotal part of it. And a lot of this stuff, you know, my wife adopts as well, who's a wonderful mother. But, you know, we both take that stance now where whatever the feeling is, it's okay. And it doesn't matter what it is or you know, even whatever it is there or the reason that it's there isn't necessarily all that important. The most important thing is that it's okay to feel that way and react.
Yeah, it's such a gift we can give to our kids. And I do think it's a very different paradigm than we were raised with. You know, I think that I know I was told, like my mom, and she was a great mom. But I mean, when I was sick or when I was sad, I mean, it was, come on, dust yourself off. Let's go. You know, the world's not waiting for you kind of thing. And,
yeah,
you know, caused me a lot of PMS. So Eddie, you know, this has been so great. Thank you so much for coming. And I want to ask you before we leave, which is I ask all my guests, We're talking to people out there that are struggling. I mean, not everybody, but a lot of the listeners that I have are in their houses, in their rooms, sometimes in your cars, and they're just struggling. What piece of advice can you give people that are struggling, who are at the beginning of this journey, to help them carry on?
So I think that, again, since we are so... since we are so open to suggestion, I think the first thing being able to say that that it's going to be okay. If you remember when I told that story in the very beginning, the person who had said this thing is wrong with your shoulder and we see this on imaging, but you're going to be okay and my pain level dropping substantially. That subtle little thing of somebody who you feel like is an authority figure, which I see you and myself as those kind of things in this arena. Being able to say that it's going to be okay and you're going to be okay, I think is first and foremost. But I think that committing to some kind of a daily practice, whether that's 20 minutes of journal speak, whether it's 10 minutes of journal speak, whether it's finding 3 minutes by yourself to look at your own Stark reactor and evaluate it and just be a watcher. Those are all things, just having something that's daily. I really hate the phrase consistency is key, but it really is key in something like this. And so I feel like, you know, that's something that it just has to happen. I think it's so easy to not do it that way. And some of the other stuff just involves, like, you know, not talking out loud about your symptoms. I see some people post online about, what do I say to my family members if they ask me why I am starting to engage in physical activity again? What do I say to them? And I feel like it's just none of their business. This is really on you. And the final thing, and me being an athlete shapes my opinion on this more than others. Sarno very much believe getting back to the max physical activity that you can. I'm absolutely in the same camp. And to some people, that's walking a block. And then to other people, that's going and doing deadlifts or squats, to the maximum intensity that is possible. I just think something, you don't need to exhaust yourself, but something where you're genuinely getting some exercise and some movement in that body of yours. If for nothing else, to just kind of shake some of the cobwebs loose. But again, the power of suggestion, if the part of you that can recognize what it is that you're doing, meaning your conscious brain, is out there running a 5K or running a mile or doing whatever it is that you want to do. If your conscious brain is suggesting that to the subconscious part of the brain, you know, you're making steps in the right direction. I got to full maximum physical activity within, 16 or 18 hours of finishing Dr. Sarno's book. And I wasn't the worst of my chronic symptoms. I didn't say goodbye to those for probably close to a year and a half. And so, you know, for some people, that's going to come on faster than others. But I think that just having the confidence and the belief that this thing is going to go away, it just may take a little bit of time. Like, you know, walk with that same swagger that you had at some point in time. As a little kid, at some point in time, you probably walked with swagger about something. I'm good at telling the jokes on popsicle sticks. I'm really good at riding my bike with the training wheels. Like, you know, that same swagger and confidence is how you ultimately need to get into this. It's not doing you any favors to, you know, post ad nauseum all the different struggles that you're having and problems that you're having relating to your pain on Facebook or on a message board, you know, on the TMS Wiki, really, you know, whatever it is for you. So yeah, confidence, max physical activity, and daily practice, I think are the musts.
Well, that's great advice. And yeah, I mean, I'm just going to kind of build on that by saying, vent in your journal speak and then live like you're already healed, because that is such a great combination, because you're not denying your feelings. You're giving your feelings a total space to come out, to be as inappropriate as they want. You know, it's kind of like Zoe, she can have a tantrum in the playroom, but not at the dinner table, right? You know, there's boundaries. And I think that that's really good advice. So Eddie, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Yeah, thank you, Nicole, for having me. This has been a blast, and hopefully this won't be the last time we talk on one another's podcast.
Absolutely not. Always, always happy to hang out. All right, guys. Well, until next week, this has been The Cure for Chronic Pain with me, Nicole, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.